Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Good afternoon. I am Herman Cain, and I'm running for President of the United States of America. I normally don't have notes, but in this case, I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss any points that I needed to cover today. Secondly, I chose to address these accusations directly rather than try to do it through a series of continuous statements.
Savage.
Herman Cain today denied the false charges against him today in an incredible press conference. His lawyer was very distinguished as opposed to the vulture that appeared yesterday with the fake accuser. And he claimed all the harassment claims are false. I mean, it's like putting him in a position of, did you stop beating your wife? How can you win? I'm not so sure he should have done this, but he did the press conference today. He said the alleged incident simply did not happen. Looking at the trash, the white trash that came out yesterday with the lower white trash lawyer who ushered her out, I have to believe Herman Cain. It's as simple as that. In fact, today Cain said he didn't even recognize the woman, Sharon Bialy, who a day earlier claimed that he made unwanted sexual advances toward her 14 years ago. What's even stranger and crazier is the psychotic white trash woman who accused Cain had the nerve on a show to say that she asked her 13-year-old son whether or not she should go public with these accusations. And her 13-year-old son, she said, told her, Mom, you need to go public with these accusations. What woman in her right mind talks about such things if they're real to a 13-year-old son? What woman in her right mind talks about such things if they're not real to a 13-year-old son? What will become of a son like hers? God only knows, but he needs the help more of a psychiatrist than of God with a mother like that. So Cain took the heat. He got up there. He said he never acted inappropriately with anyone, and he said he will stay in the race. Most importantly, he started to try to talk about the problems America's having today, rather than the problems he's having as a result of the double standard in the media. Need I remind you that Bill Clinton engaged in oral sex with Monica Lewinsky inside the White House, then lied under oath, that he suborned perjury and abused his office to cover it up? Need I remind you that Bill Clinton was a sexual predator who presided over this scandal and the press gave him a pass? Need I remind you that Senator Edward M. Kennedy was a sexual predator, and his predations, or his predatory behavior, resulted in the death of a young woman who drowned as a result of him covering up his acts with her? Need I remind you that Al Gore had sexual problems with a masseuse, who said he acted like a sex-crazed poodle, and these very same little jackals, these Lilliputian jackals, would not even follow up on the Al Gore scandal? How about Barney Frank and his homosexual dalliances with a homosexual prostitute while being a congressman? That doesn't impress you? They didn't touch him. They didn't touch him. How about Barack Obama while he was running for office and his radical past, his ties to terrorists such as Bill Ayers, his infatuation with the anti-American, anti-Semitic pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright? How come that wasn't mentioned? How about the fact that these brave men and women of the media who today were oh so brave in asking Cain about such false things did not ask the president why he will not unseal his academic, medical, and health records? The answer is because conservatives are held to a separate standard, especially black conservatives, are held to another standard altogether. The fact of the matter is, I watched Herman Cain. I know more than ever that he's telling the truth, because no man who's hiding a thing like this would ever hold a press conference and take questions. I want to remind you that the white trash woman who was paraded yesterday with her white trash attorney who paraded her yesterday did not take any questions from the so-called press. But today, Herman Cain opened himself up to questions from the press. You'll hear some of them in a few moments here in the Savage Nation. You will not believe the hissing voices of some of these lowlifes in the media. The worst of them all, the most horrendous voice I've ever heard in the media, I heard today from a descendant of somebody in the Third Reich from Reuters news agency. I've never heard anything like it. The man was almost hissing like a snake rather than... speaking like a man. Why don't you just listen to this question directed at Herman Cain by a hisser?
Tim Gaynor, Reuters news agency. Mr. Cain, an Ipsos Reuters poll released this afternoon showed that 40% of Republican voters view you less favorably after seeing Monday's accusations from Sharon Bialik.
Oh, go back. Go crawl back into the Third Reich crypt. I don't know what to say to you. An Ipsos Reuters poll. I'm the only member of the American media who knows who Ipsos is. Where did Ipsos come from? An Ipsos Reuters poll. Reuters is as far left Marxist communist as you can get. Who is Ipsos? Why do Americans care what an Ipsos poll says? Why don't you look up Ipsos and find out who they are? They're not even an American company. It's a shadowy, invented polling company. Well, the rest of the questions were not much better. They were out to get him. And I thought Cain did a great job. If you say to me, what convinced you amongst all of it other than the man's honesty and integrity? I'll tell you what did it. It was right at the end of the press conference today. Somebody asked him some question, I don't know which, some woman again tried to act tough with, do you think sexual harassment's a serious crime? You know, again, right out of something Kafkaesque beyond comprehension. He was so guilty without being allowed to prove his innocence. I never saw such lowness in my life. It was sickening to watch. Anyway, so he says to them, the one accuser I remember, I think it's the one who got the settlement or the sign-off. And by the way, if she got 30 grand, it's no big deal. Those are called nuisance suits. All a woman has to do is say a man made her uncomfortable at work and go to the human resources department. They will march her out with a year's salary. We are living in the most despicable era in American history when the disgusting lawyers of America have made open season on America's workforce, especially the white male. In this case, it was a black male, an easier target, yes, yet. Anyway, here's what Cain said happened. He said, one case I do remember. There was a woman, she came into my office by so and forth a name, the one who got the settlement. And he said, the door was open and my assistant was sitting there. It was never done in the dark. And he said, I noticed she was short. She came up to my shoulders. And I said to her, you're the same height as my wife. He said, that's all I said to her. She never said, I'm offended by it. She never went to human resources and said, I'm offended by it. Instead, this lowlife later on said he sexually harassed her by saying she was the same height as his wife. This is what America's workplace has come to as a result of lawyers, the EEOC, and the so-called women's movement. He said to the woman, you're the same height as my wife. That was considered sexual harassment by who? Is anyone listening to this show? Does anyone listening to this show believe that's sexual harassment to say to a woman, you're the same height as my wife? You want to live in a country like that? You want to live in a country where late-night junkies on HBO get to dictate the terms of our country? Every poll that comes out shows the majority of Americans are moderate conservatives. Every poll after poll, shows that we're being run by a tiny minority of radical liberals who are leading us around like sheep with rings in our noses. And they use their attack dogs. They use their degenerate junkie perverts on HBO and the other channels at night to make you think that they're the majority. They're the smallest minority. The American people hate these rats. The American people don't trust these rats. The American people hate these people that they have on television. They hate them with a passion because they don't believe a word they say. And along comes an honest black man, and look what they try to do to him. Look what they tried to do to him. Does it not show you that liberals behind the back of blacks hate them? They put them down. They're not your friends. If you're a black person of education, all you've got to know is that behind your back, the liberals are putting you down. How do I know that? There's a man on HBO by the name of Bill Maher. I think he's one of the lowest of all of them. And then there's another one on MSNBC, a sneering lowlife who has no ratings, who thinks that she's still in the college dorm with her sorority sisters. And then there's the nun journalist Thomas Friedman, a liar of the lowest order, who mocked Mr. Kane on Home Box Office for being, quote, too dumb and stupid to be taken seriously. That's right. That's what they said about him. In other words, he's a black man, and therefore he's too dumb and too stupid to be taken seriously. Another person you've never heard of is Martin Basher. Martin Basher tried for months to get Michael Savage on his lowly rated show, even going so low as to tell me about a heart condition he had in an email to try and appease me to get me on his show. But I knew who he was. I remember his days on Nightline. I knew he was another vampire. MSNBC host Martin Basher, who is known as a radical British leftist, you know what he said? He asked on his program whether Mr. Kane even knows how to spell Iraq. That's what they think of black people. How any black person listening to this show could not understand that liberals are your greatest enemy is something I could never understand. Anyway, Kane came out today. He denied all the charges. We'll play some of the sound. I will have one comment, though, before I take this break that I must put out. His handlers are amateurs. They left him up there too long, number one. They didn't cut him off. If he should have taken any questions at all is a question. But number two, they left him up there too long. They didn't control him. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Or spokespeople, because that's the person Herman Cain is to take my message directly to the people. With respect to the most recent accusation, I have never acted inappropriately with anyone, period.
Okay, let's pause right here. You know, it would be such a pleasure to live in a country where we have a plain-talking man whose instincts are correct, whose love for America is obvious, and who has a business background. And the fact of the matter is, that is why both Republicans and Democrats hate Herman Cain. That is why the machine hates Herman Cain, because the pillaging of the American taxpayer would likely come to an end very rapidly. Should Herman Cain win the Republican nomination and then, of course, go into debates with the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. Obama would not want to meet Herman Cain on a stage, I can guarantee you, with the lights on, because Obama is the opposite of Herman Cain. Herman Cain is authentic. Barack Hussein Obama is a construction. Obama is an invention. Obama has been constructed by various and sundry individuals just for the position he has today, in my estimation. And Herman Cain is the opposite. He's a man who came up the old way and came up on his own. And I have to tell you, when Herman Cain came on my show, I don't know, in August, I didn't know that he had a degree in mathematics, and I learned it on the show and I disclosed it. I didn't know he had a master's degree, I believe, in computer science. And I was very proud to learn that. I was then also proud to learn that Herman Cain then worked for the U.S. Navy as a civilian employee in ballistics analysis. Very important work where he calculates the trajectory of a projectile to determine whether or not the shell will or did hit a target. Very complicated work if you ever try to do anything along those lines. I myself am not a mathematically adept individual, but I appreciate those who are. This is a very intelligent man who speaks very slowly, and he can easily be confused with a stupid man. Now, opposed to him is a man who speaks very quickly, who can easily be confused with an intelligent man. You see what I'm saying? As a side note, your president, Barack Hussein Obama, who will shortly be leaving for Bali on another vacation with his wife. That's right, yet another vacation. You have to ask yourself why they're getting him out of Dodge. Why are they sending him to Bali? The organization CETO, or something along Southeast Asian Treaty, or CETO, is a very small organization. And so far as I know, no president in the past has ever visited this organization. I believe it's always been a lower-level State Department official or a Secretary of State who's gone there. No president in the past. The only reason they're going to Bali, well, there are many reasons, is A, it's a good vacation site, and B, it's the most populous Muslim nation on earth. Make no mistake about it, Indonesia is the most populous Muslim nation on earth. As you may know, Bali is a part of Indonesia, the last I checked, at least I think it still is. There's another side note about Indonesia that you may not know, but I do know a little bit of its history. After nationalism, 2 or 3 million Chinese were driven out of Indonesia and killed. 2 or 3 million Chinese were slaughtered by the Indonesian Muslims during the Revolutionary War, which was not longer than 30 or 40 years ago, so far as I remember. Now, most of you don't know that. I just threw it in there because there are some people who remember the slaughter of the Chinese. Notably, the people in China remember the slaughter of the Chinese in Indonesia. But that's a story for another day. Tomorrow, your president will turn off the spigot on every television and radio show in America for a few minutes. Tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time or 11 a.m. Pacific Time, your president, through his FEMA and FCC heads, will close down every television and radio operator for a few minutes tomorrow, supposedly to test the emergency alert system. This has never been done before. Local tests have been done before. A national test has never been done before. This is shocking, and I do not believe for one second that there's not a nefarious reason for this. Not for one second do I believe it from the shadowy group that's running the United States of America.
Savage.
$7 billion people on the earth. I want you to think about it. We're talking about one man who wants to be president who's being smeared by some of the most evil people in American history. Do you know what happened 8 minutes ago to everyone listening to this show? You know, there's something that ties us all together aside from our DNA. Do you know what happened 8 minutes ago? Do you know that all of us missed a disaster? 8 minutes ago, that's right, 6:28 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, November 8th, a space rock traveling at 29,000 miles an hour, 8 miles a second, just missed the Earth. Asteroid 2005 YU-55 just shot past Earth. That was about 7 minutes ago. Now, I don't think you understand the meaning of this. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But the fact of the matter is, this asteroid, if it was on a slightly different trajectory, if it had been affected slightly differently by other planets, by asteroids, by space dust, or other factors, it could have come closer to the Earth instead of the 200 or so thousand miles away. Closer than the moon, by the way, at one point. Tug of gravity might have been increased slightly. But what if the tug of gravity from a planet in a galaxy far, far away was even stronger? What about if there was a slight alteration by a few micrometers that could have added up over the course of millions of light years that it took to reach us? Can you imagine? You know, even the effect of light is enough to alter the path of an asteroid. I know that you want to talk about Herman Cain and the alleged incidents and all of that. This is an amazing story, but I do not believe that we are immune from such a strike. In fact, those in the business of space and such tell us that although the last asteroid hit us 60 million years ago, there's another one coming and we're almost overdue for it. The famous one, the hole in Siberia, indicates that an asteroid hit the Earth. There's a gigantic crater in Arizona. I mean, if you were a kid in New York when I was and you went to the Museum of Natural History, all of us wondered at the size of that space rock sitting there. We used to look at it. It wasn't real to us that it actually came from Earth. But here we had asteroid 2005YU55, the size of modern aircraft carrier, the size of a modern aircraft carrier, just passed us now about 10 minutes ago, and it didn't hit us. But what if it had been closer? What if it did hit us? We'd all be, most of us would be dead. Most every living thingless on this earth would be gone. And here we are. Here we are talking about one man who would be president, one man accused by a group of filthy gold diggers, in my estimation. This is what America has come down to. We were once, when I was a kid, number one in math and science in the whole world. That's right. Everyone looked up to the scientists and the engineers and the doctors. Take a look at the filth that we look up to now, that our children are shown as role models. Take a look at the lowlifes, the degenerates, the drug addicts that are held up as role models in this country today. In my day, we looked up at the engineers, the scientists, NASA that Obama destroyed. He destroyed NASA. One man came along and rewrote the entire playbook. He destroyed NASA. That's right. And who does he have into the White House? He doesn't have many scientists or engineers. He has basketball players in the White House. That's what we have now in the United States of America. But I don't want to complain about it. Let's go back to the Kane story, since you're not interested in asteroids. Did Kane survive the asteroid of complaints against him? Did Kane survive the asteroids that were thrown at him? I think he did. Let me take a caller or two. Tom in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Mike. With regard to the asteroid, very quickly, Obama canceled the space shuttle, and that was one of our only means of intercepting an asteroid. So we're dead in the water if another one comes. But with regard to Mr. Kane, I think there's just too many women that are bringing these charges against him, sexual harassment charges. If there were just one or two, I would say okay, but there's like five right now.
So you're saying where there's smoke, there's fire, and therefore he's guilty. But let's go to the issue itself of what sexual harassment is today. The bimbo yesterday said that he sexually assaulted her, by the way. He didn't harass her. If that were true, she could have had him put in jail. You know that, don't you?
I know, but she was looking for a job. And
Wait a minute. She said he grabbed her head, put it to his crotch. Ludicrous on the face of it. Is it possible that he's just an easy target?
No, I don't think so. I think he's slicker than you think he is. I think he's guilty, to tell you the truth, even though I'm a conservative. And
let me start at the top. I'm not here to be Herman Cain's defender. I wasn't born to defend Herman Cain, okay? Let me start with that, Tom. Intuitively, I'd like to see him as the president of the United States of America, because I think, as simple as he may look, yeah, of course there's more to him than meets the eye, but I actually think that he'd be a better president than any of the other candidates. How's that?
Okay. But how about the fact that he doesn't know that China is a nuclear power?
Well, now you're changing the subject to another one. Are you sure he doesn't know that?
You want to be president? You should have some knowledge of that, I would imagine.
I would say that he'd surely find that out pretty quickly, wouldn't he?
What's that?
I mean, I would say he'd surely would have found it out pretty quickly, or would find that out pretty quickly, all the things he doesn't know. How can a man know everything?
Oh, come on. That's simple. Everybody knows that. Even Sarah Palin.
Well, he may not have known that China was a nuclear power, but he certainly knows that China is an economic power.
Yeah, but I think nuclear is a little bit more important.
He certainly knows what has to be done, not to stop China's nukes, but to stop China's nuking of our economy. I think he'd be pretty good at that.
I think Romney would be better. Romney is a real executive.
Look, I'm not going to change your mind, because whether or not you work for Romney is irrelevant. I would vote for Romney if it comes down to Romney versus Obama. I'd vote for a dog catcher over Obama. Any dog catcher who could show me his birth certificate, social security number, and his voting record and his college record, I'd vote for over Obama. So let's start with that. So sure, I'd vote for Romney over Obama. After what this man has done to this country in these couple of years he's been in power, the man has almost wrecked of every institution in the country. Do you feel safer as an American with Obama as president?
Absolutely not. Now, did you hear about the discussion he had with Sarkozy when the mics were off?
Yes, where Sarkozy said he hates Netanyahu, and then Obama sneered at Netanyahu, says, I have to deal with him, something to that effect.
Exactly. So, are your Jewish friends going to still vote for him?
My Jewish friends? I have no Jewish friends because categorically I have no friends. So let's start with that. I found out in my adulthood that there are no such thing as friends in adulthood. Friends are for children in a sandbox where you create alliances to keep yourself from getting your behind whooped. But when you grow up, you find out that there's only self-interest. There is no friendship. But going to the point of your question, I'm sad to tell you that the liberal Jews that I know and I have known in my life have a lack of a survival skill, something that I cannot fathom. After what went on in the 1940s, to believe that Jews don't even understand who their friends are and confuse their enemies with their friends is amazing to me.
Well, you're right on target. Hey, thanks for...
Well, let me ask you something, Tom, since we're talking about Israel and Jews. Do you believe Israel's going to take a strike at Iran's nukes?
I don't think they'll allow them to do that because it would disrupt the oil flow from the Middle
now,
East.
Now, that's what Sarkozy and Obama meant by sneering at Netanyahu, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
In other words, they don't like the fact that little Israel is going to stand in the way of the big powers and that they're liable and Israel's liable to upset the world order by wanting to survive. After all, what right do Jews have to survive is what Sarkozy, who is allegedly half-Jewish himself, incidentally.
I didn't know that. But
You didn't know? Yeah, Sarkozy derives heritage-wise, I believe, from a Moroccan Jewish father. And, of course, in order to compensate for that, he has to be more anti-Israel than anyone else.
But it's very dangerous over there because Russia could get pulled in because they have an interest in Iran. And, you know, we can start a world war.
No, it's terribly true. It's terribly true. But Israel's back is to the wall because the psychos in Iran are saying they're going to wipe Israel off the planet. So what choice does Israel have right now? Tell me.
That's a tough one because I think... I don't know, maybe somebody can talk to them. That's what Ron Paul was saying. You know, we talked to the Russians.
Are you kidding? You can talk to Hitler? Was anyone ever able to talk to Adolf Hitler? You think you can talk to fanatic Muslim mullahs who live in the 9th century? You think you can talk to these throwbacks in Iran who have a psychotic who believes that peace will reign on earth only after a cataclysm of war? The Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, can you believe you think someone can reason with that man? I don't believe so. I personally believe that we're entering a cataclysmic phase in human life, and I personally believe that we've reached a critical mass of 7 billion people, and I believe that there's going to be a major war and or a major outbreak of bioterrorism, and I believe that a good portion of the Earth's population will... I'm sorry to tell you, I don't even want to go down this road. I do not believe... that it's unlikely that what I'm implying will not happen. I believe we're at that critical mass right now. And whether it be Israel attacking Iran because they have no choice, or a consortium of Israel, Britain, France, and the United States attacking Iran with a wink from China and Russia, who themselves don't want to get drawn into this and know that Iran is a threat to the New World Order, I don't really know. But I do know that something is going to happen very soon. And I think this asteroid coming so close to the Earth 15, 20 minutes ago, as I just said, is almost an indicator from space, from God, from fate, from the universe, that we're very close to something horrendous occurring on this planet.
Hey, we'll be right.
I know that's that's a little too much for the audience to bear, but before I finish up and get back to Cain, to get back to a very simple story, a simplistic story that anyone can relate to because it's man accused by women and which side are you on. I mean, that's a basic meat and potatoes radio. Give me 2 minutes with you, please. My audience, please give me 2 minutes. I must tell you this. When I was 18 or 19 years old, I read a lot of things. I was exploring every aspect of, you know, whatever. One of the authors I fell in love with was Emmanuel Velikovsky, who wrote a couple of important books. One was called Earth in Upheaval and Earth in Collision. And he opened my mind up. I was a young student of biology, and he opened my mind up to facts I was not aware of. Such as, how do you explain the fossil record of, for example, the bones of tigers in New England? Where'd they come from? How do you explain the geological history of the Earth, where if you look at certain strata of the Earth, you see that other continents, pieces of other continents and inhabitants of other continents in the form of plant or animal life can be found in disparate continents. So for in North America, we see remnants of life from Africa. How did this happen? So Emmanuel Velikovsky wrote that in the very distant past, and deep within our memory, in the core of our memory, all of us humans have a distant memory, there was a cataclysm where either an asteroid hit this Earth or something along those lines. There was a celestial event, and most of the life on the Earth was wiped out. And then I saw how Velikovsky was treated. He was treated as a quack, a crazy man, a nut. He was a Russian scientist. They put him down every way they could, but I thought his evidence spoke for itself. Then I was surprised that later on, I think it was in the 1960s, I've been around, I guess, longer than I'd like to believe. I'm sorry to even have to say that. The American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is the equivalent of the AMA, it's about as mainstream and as white bread as you can ever get. It's like the Democrat-Republican Party, honored Emmanuel Velikovsky for his insights and his work. I thought that was amazing. So what does that have to do with today and the asteroid almost hitting the Earth? I think, ladies and gentlemen, that we are in very strange times. I think that the turmoil in America and the world is indicative of the fact that we are in a very perplexing, dangerous time. I think that the fact that we have a man with so many questions that surround him, that the jackals and the fifth column refuse to investigate, indicates we're in a very dangerous time. I think that when an honest black man arises out of nowhere, it seems, a man who could possibly lead us in the next few years from this terrible trouble we're in, get rid of the thieves on Wall Street, get rid of the vultures inside government, get rid of the overbearing federal government, get it off our backs, straighten out the tax code. I think that when an honest man like that comes along and they try to destroy him with one white trasher after another, it indicates that Herman Cain would be the best choice. But that's one man's opinion. I'll be right back.
Savage.
One day in my office at the National Restaurant Association, I was standing next to Ms. Crowshaw, and I gestured, standing near her like this, "You're the same height as my wife, because my wife comes up to my chin." That was the one gesture that I remember. The door was open. A secretary was sitting there. It wasn't anything behind closed doors. I gestured because of her height, comparing it to my wife's height. End of story.
So for that, the woman got a settlement of $30,000, $40,000. That's because of the women's movement, and that's because of vultures with law degrees who have perverted the entire meaning of justice, the entire meaning of the women's movement, and the entire meaning of real sexual harassment. You understand it's open season on men, especially in corporate environments where women who want to quit or they're tired, they don't want to work, can just simply say, "Oh, he made me uncomfortable." Well, I've been uncomfortable virtually every day of my life. I never sued anybody because they made me uncomfortable. You don't like it, you leave, that's all. But that's a separate story. You just heard him yourself, right? Anyway, here we are. 30 minutes ago, an asteroid just missed the Earth that could have wiped out a good portion of life on Earth. The last one hit 60 or so million years ago, right? There's a positive to that as well. It would have been over in a flash. You wouldn't have even known it. And then you wouldn't have to decide whether you want to use cremation or burial. You know, and it would have solved that problem. If you don't have a dark sense of humor, how can you get through life? If you can't laugh at it all, you know, then I guess you got to go to a psychiatrist. I have to respect Herman Cain. Here is a man who should have, in my opinion, his lawyer, by the way, was very respectable as opposed to the creature that came out yesterday, the creature in a skirt, who was probably the most hated lawyer in American history yesterday. Cain's lawyer was a very dignified, respectable lawyer. He made a lot of points because he said he's represented women who have really been sexually harassed, and he knows both sides of the story. He also knows about people who have been falsely accused. This guy was good, so I thought that was great. But having said that, I think Cain went on too long, and they should not have taken as many questions. They were all hostile. all of the little boys and girls who don't have the guts to ask Obama any questions of any merit whatsoever, all the little boys and girls who never asked Bonnie Frank about the male prostitution scandal, all the boys and girls who never would never in a million years ask then-candidate Senate Barack Obama about his relationships with his ties to terrorists such as Bill Ayers, his 20-year affiliation with an anti-American, anti-Semitic pastor named Reverend Jeremiah Wright. All of these people who would never even ask Obama about his Muslim upbringing as a youth in Indonesia are suddenly all over Kane asking him about innuendo rather than real sexual harassment, because this is all about innuendo, isn't it? All of these very tough men and women who were so relentless in their attacks on Herman Cain today had nothing to say when Al Gore was accused of far worse, incidentally. Not one word. Let's go to the callers. Martin in Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation. What do you think about Cain today?
Dr. Savage, I thought he did a beautiful job of myself being an African-American male. This thing reminds me, I was born and raised in Mississippi. And this reminds me of a lynching. You know, the NAACP and all these black groups claim that they represent African-Americans. But, you know, we conservative African-Americans, we left the plantation a long time ago.
And you know what I call, Martin, the NAALP, the National Association for the Advancement of Liberal People.
Exactly. And Dr. Savage, I strongly...
Martin, wait, I don't want you to go, but I got to tell you, you touched a chord in me. Yes, it reminds me of people saying that that black man raped that woman in the South of 100 years ago. That black man, he raped my Jenny. That's what I'm seeing here. I'm getting sick watching it. I'm sick of these Lilliputians.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Darren, if you don't get the apology that you're seeking from Herman Cain, will you be taking further legal steps against him?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
First of all, I believe the statute of limitations would have run out by now. And second of all, that wasn't my goal here. My goal was simply to get him to admit the wrongdoing. I'd hope today had turned out differently, that he would be calling a press conference, and it didn't.
Mr. Cain, Steve Futterman with CBS News. I'd like to ask you a two-part question. First of all, do you think it is appropriate for a candidate's character to come under a microscope in a campaign? And secondly, you are basically now in a he said, she said situation. She's saying something, you're saying something. They're both diametrically opposing each other. As distasteful as it might be, would you be willing to do a lie detector test to prove your honesty in something like this?
Even though
I'm sure... Oh, go ahead.
Yes, I absolutely would.
Shocking.
But I'm not going to do that unless I have a good reason to do that.
Herman Cain defending himself from the most salacious attacks I've ever seen in my life. As I said to a caller in the last hour here on the Savage Nation, this reminds me of what I read went on in some southern states of the United States of America, maybe in the early part of the last century, where people accused blacks falsely of rape, and then they hung blacks and lynched them. This is a lynching. You're watching it, and it's being conducted by white trash women in cahoots with some of the most dangerous people this country has ever seen. This is an orchestrated smear campaign coming, no doubt, both from the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. Why do I say it? Because it's obvious. This man is an independent who came from nowhere. He was not anointed by the big shots who run the Republican Party. And they're doing this to him because they don't want him to grab the reins of this nation's treasury. Because God forbid an honest man should grab the reins of this nation's treasury. God forbid the American people should not be fleeced for four more years. And so I think that it's likely that it's coming from both parties, the power structure, as it were. And having watched this today, I was both heartened by Cain's honesty and his courage, by the way. I don't know why his handlers or the lawyer didn't use the fact that he is a stage four cancer survivor. I think they missed an opportunity. Maybe Herman Cain doesn't want to rely upon being a victim. Maybe he's even a bigger man than I think he is. But you do know he's a stage four cancer survivor. Now, if I thought that this would have some effect upon the vermin drug addict degenerates who are doing this to him, I would say so. But I don't think so. They have no heart and soul. By what they're doing to him, whatever shred of decency they may have had has gone out the window. I've never seen anything like it. He raped my Jenny. Why, who? Who did that, Mrs. Jones? It's that black man over there. He raped my Jenny. Go get him. So Jenny was the slut in the town. And then she was found out to be the slut. The mama said she lost her virginity because that black man over there did it. That's what you're watching. Make no mistake about it. You are watching the lynching of a black man. But you don't understand what you're watching. Because you have been so brainwashed by the illiberal, illegitimate, liberal media that you actually think that this might be true. I don't believe it could possibly be true. So you say, well, there's four women, it must be true. Why must it be true? The man was a high-profile black man in American corporate culture when there were not a lot of black men at that level in American corporate culture. And there were a lot of white women who hated black people. And they wanted to get the black man. And they figured the best way to get the black man is to accuse him of what they think the public thinks of black men, which are sexual crimes. Now, how many times do I have to remind you if that creature, that white trash that we saw yesterday who had her hair redone and the lipstick, I mean, you know that Gloria Allred paid for the hairdo. We read that she has financial trouble. We read that she lived in a building with Obama's number one advisor, David Axelrod, if that's not enough for you. We know that they redid her for the big appearance yesterday. To believe this woman, if what had happened, to believe that she would not have gone to the police, stretches the mind even of the lowest of the listeners. I can't believe that you would suspect that for one second, that a woman like this would not have gone to the police. That's crazy to even believe that. Anyway, I think that Herman Cain did a fine job. I think that we see that there's nothing to any of this other than a smear campaign. And I don't understand why his attorney or he himself, well, he couldn't do it, but his attorney could have said, and by the way, Mr. Cain is a stage four cancer survivor. And we're very impressed with the fact that he refuses to quit. I couldn't take it. I'll be very honest with you. I could not take what this man is living through. Could you? Could you take it? Could you take what Herman Cain is taking? I actually see a stronger man than I thought was there. I see a man could take this job. Actually, he's going through a, you know, he's a very religious man. He's a part-time Baptist minister. He probably is relying upon his wife and Jesus for his comfort and his sustenance, something that you may not even understand, where he gets the strength to put up with these false accusations. This man is proving that he can walk through fire itself, that he can walk through hate and he can walk through false accusations and come out taller than before. This man is more qualified to be the president of the United States than he was yesterday. This man could take false accusations. This man could take hate. This man could take threats. And guess what? He came out of it with a smile. This is the kind of man we need in the White House. Not a thin-skinned, suspicious type of personality who bristles at any criticism, who bristles at any idea that he may have done something wrong. This is the opposite. This is the alpha and omega of individuals. And I frankly think that Herman Cain would make a perfectly fine candidate and hopefully the President of the United States. Whether or not it comes to that, I don't know. I have no idea whether the machine will destroy him. This is the most powerful machine in the world. After all, if they could wreck the Middle East, if they could take an ally of 40 years like Mubarak and destroy him and wreck Egypt and see churches burning in Egypt and Christians being driven out of their homes and get away with it, if they could hunt down Mr. Gaddafi and kill him in front of the world, murder a world leader, murder a man who was begging for his life, and have Hillary Clinton come back and laugh and say, "We came, we saw, he died," and get away with it. Just think of what they're capable of doing to an unknown black man who ran a pizza chain. And you'll see what they're doing to Herman Cain. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Has anyone offered you any money in this situation?
Absolutely not.
Do you plan to make any money off of it? Would you write a book? Would you do interviews for money? Would you do a magazine interview for money based on this?
This isn't why I came forward.
But would you do it?
I'd have to think about that.
You lived in at 505 North Lake Shore Drive apartment, mm-hmm. right? And that's the same building. It happens to be the same building that David Axelrod lives
yes,
in.
Yes,
do you
him.
Know David Axelrod ever had any interaction with him at all?
I saw him in the gym. Everybody nods to each other. It's a friendly building, but I never had any interaction with him.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, I think it's pretty clear who put her up to this. And she'll be tomorrow's news, you know, like Warhol said, 15 minutes of fame. This human being, if you want to call her that, had her 15 seconds of fame, and she'll be forgotten tomorrow. Who's going to care about it tomorrow? There's nothing here. Absolutely nothing here. And it just made Cain look better, that's all, in plain English. It shows he can take the heat. You know, as they used to say in a phrase, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. Well, he can take the heat. He is a stage 4 cancer survivor, which I'll keep repeating until eventually somebody in the media hears me. Herman Cain is a stage 4 cancer survivor. Have you no decency left in you? Every day you walk around these fake victims. A homeless bum criminal you hold up like he's a victim. An illegal alien you hold up as a victim. But a stage 4 cancer survivor is not a victim because he dares be a conservative. Is that the problem? Well, look, we know how the game works. And that's why this game is not working. We know how the game works, and that's why this game is not working. Now, a side note, a personal side note for those of you who heard enough about Cain and don't listen to me for the news. I've got to feed my hungry audience out there for the brilliant side notes of the Savage Nation, which to many people is the real set rather than the frame of the show. Most of you think that the set of the show are politics and that the frame are the other things, but in actuality, things are somewhat reversed. I got a call from my literary agent today who told me that St. Martin's Press is ecstatic with the success of Abuse of Power, and I want to thank my audience again. It's only my audience that accounts for this because, you know, I'm banned from Fox News. They only have the people that they have on. But nevertheless, you'd think even Fox News would understand it would be good for ratings. But apparently the leprechaun is so jealous of me that he overrides Roger Ailes, and I'm persona non grata at Fox. But, you know, good luck to him. I don't need him. He needs me. And there's another adage, by the way. Anyway, they're so thrilled with the sale of the book, they said to him, "We'll publish anything Michael writes. What does he want to do next?" Every author in the world waits to hear that word where a publisher says, "What do you want to write next?" Well, I am writing 2 books right now, but there's something else that I want to tell you about. And I don't know how to do it other than to do it because I'm very much like Herman Cain. Maybe I don't think things through enough, and maybe I give away too much on the show that I shouldn't give away. So I said to my agent today, "You know what I really want to do next?" He said, "What?" I said, "You know, I began as a writer, not as a talk show host. Back in the 1960s, I was a writer." He said, "Really?" I said, "Really." And about 2 years ago, I archived all of my early writings of Michael Savage, and as a partial list, he said, "Could you read me some of the titles?" I said, "Well, it's all archived. It's all in boxes, and none of it's been published." He said, "Well, what are some of the titles?" And I don't want to read them to you, but they're here. Some of them are plays, some of them are novellas, some are short stories, some are short books. And some of them are darn good. Some of them are really good. And I sent one of them to him. And I don't doubt it's going to be published. And to me, it's almost the completion of a circle. I don't want to get too into that right now because it, in a way it frightens me because, you know, it's like a completion of a life when you start to see your early work now going to be published. It's almost like the finishing of the wheel. And I don't really want to get into that state of mind because it's a very spooky feeling to go there. But truthfully, I don't control any of that. You know that. We don't control it. Do I have premonitions about the mountain and the other side of the mountain? I have no premonitions whatsoever. All I have is fears and respect for God, and the rest is up to him. But the fact is that things are happening in my life that should have happened a long time ago that didn't happen. But as I said to you last week, I had a dream to that. Remember where I said to the woman, you find yourself in a place and you say, I don't belong here. I don't want to be here. And I said in the dream, I said to the woman, to the black woman at that, you are where you're supposed to be. That's why you're there. Remember that dream? Well, in many ways, that's me. Many times I complain that I'm somewhere I don't want to be, that why is this happening? Why have I spent 3 years fighting legal battles? Why do I have to do this when I should be enjoying my life? Well, I am where I'm supposed to be. That's all there is to it. And so you have to deal with it as you just deal with it. So now I'm at a place as a writer where I don't know what I would have given 30 years ago to be where I am today. But you can't be where you want to be when you want to be there. And that's something that the creeps in the Occupy movement don't understand. They think because they studied art history, they should be running the Metropolitan Museum, when in fact, they're not even fit to serve coffee. Because to serve coffee, you have to have self-control and discipline. They don't even have that. It's another show topic I was going to do today, which is a show about blue-collar jobs, by the way. Dirty jobs that are going for begging in New York City right now. Thousands of the dirtiest and toughest jobs in New York are not filled. Why? Take a look at the bums in Occupy Wall Street, which, by the way, if I were mayor, they would be in prison by now. They would have been in prison for at least 30 days for what they've done to that city or in Oakland. They don't want to take these jobs. They're not good enough for these jobs. They tell parents when they visit and they tell them that there are jobs in technical jobs or careers in auto, auto careers like that. The parents say, oh, my child is not going to come to your school just to change the oil and fix cars. Well, guess what? Somebody has to fix cars, don't they? All of them want to run a company. They all want to get into academic programs at school. And the fact of the matter is, not everybody is fit to attend an academic program. There's a lot of honor and dignity in some of these jobs. You know, the average salary of as much as $50,000 for a truck driver. There are jobs as diesel technicians that can start at $30,000, and these jobs come with full benefits. They don't have anyone to fill these jobs. Take a guess who your mechanics are today. They're mainly young Mexican guys because in Mexico they went to trade school where they weren't too proud to go to trade school to learn how to be a mechanic. So the fact is I remember when I went to Jamaica High School in Queens, New York, there were three levels of high schools, and I don't even know which one was more advanced than the other. There was the academic program for kids who wanted to be, I guess, professionals if you want to put it that way, I suppose, yes. Then there was a commercial high school for young people, kids who wanted to go into, secretaries perhaps, office work, and not run the office. And then there was another track, the trade schools. We had a trade school right near Jamaica High School where the tougher kids learned how to fix things, make things, break things. They became mechanics and they became electricians and plumbers. And that was, nobody wants to do that. They're like stupid. Well, most of them wound up making more money than the kids who went to the academic high schools, by the way. And take a look today what goes on in this country. Here you have bums in the Occupy parks who are not fit for anything. Why? They went and got a very expensive college degree, perhaps, let's say, in art history. Art history. And what did they think was waiting for them when they came out? Maybe they thought they'd run a museum. Well, they can't run a museum. There are no jobs. So they're screaming and they're yelling and they're throwing a fit and they're having a tantrum. And instead of cleaning up these parks, which Bloomberg should have done a long time ago, which the nonentity in Oakland, California should have done a long time ago, every one of these encampments are a violation of civility and of the law, and they should have been cleaned up a long time ago. And the tantrum thrower should have been put in jail for 30 days.
Savage.
All Welcome back to the Savage Nation. So, you know, Cain did his thing today, and he showed he's a man of strength and, frankly, a man of faith, because no man could walk through this fire the way he does, with such good, you know, good countenance and good humor, despite the accusations and the mud being thrown at him, unless he was a decent person. And it shows that he's ready for the office that he's running for, frankly, and I think it's going to help him. And that's all there is. What can you say about it? So the white trashers are going to keep coming out of the woodwork. What does it prove? It proves nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. And the fact of the matter is, life goes on, and our life will go on, and I hope he goes on. I don't know how he does it with a man who survived cancer like this. I just don't understand how he can take it. Me, I go on. As you know, Abuse of Power has almost sold out its first printing, and I mean, I'm not trying to sell you a book, honest to God. I know many of you are going to want to buy it for Christmas. It's going to probably be sold out. Whether they're going to be able to print it in time, I don't know. Yes, I want you to go and buy the book, of course. It's a matter of importance to me because it tells the story of a man who was smeared by the very same media types that are smearing Cain. It's astonishing to me, the similarities in some regard of what they're doing to him and what they did to me with the false accusations about Britain and how I got banned there by the slimy limies. So what am I doing? What I'm doing is I'm writing the next sequel to Abuse of Power, and I'm going to read it to you right now. It's about a paragraph long. You ready? This is the next book. You didn't even read Abuse of Power yet, so here's the next one. This is after he saved the world in the first story. Jack took to sitting alone outside the Blank restaurant on Columbus Avenue, especially on Fridays when he ordered a daily special of pan-roasted halibut over polenta, $19. He eschewed the stewed rabbit because it looked too much like Eddie, and the calamari fritti, although he wanted it, he didn't eat it because it was greasy and fried but delicious, phenomenal. He figured maybe I'll get it tonight. Anyway, Jack's there sitting on a warm November day pondering all he had done to stop the last 9/11 without any accolades. No accolades. Nobody even noticed. Why? Because America had sunk so far into liberalism that only the perverts, the deviants, and subversives were celebrated. Men like Jack had to not only march to their own drummer, but not hear a drum after they saved the nation. Jack was enjoying his second glass of Sauvignon Blanc and his pan-roasted halibut, not with polenta but with spinach sautéed in olive oil, when a group of tourists stopped to look at the restaurant on the crowded little street. He could not believe how boorish they were, literally staring at him as though he were a performer, not even knowing who he was, of course, just watching a man eating at an outdoor table. Jack contemplated the degeneration of America, where people have no concept of dignity or space. One more paragraph for fun today, okay? Jack sometimes lived in two separate worlds. One, the world of the boat that he lived on. The other, the world of San Francisco's lost waterfront, which he loved very much, which was really one world, the same world. And then he lived in the other world, the world of the suburban mall, where his ex-wife kept the house where he occasionally house sat. Every time he walked in the mall and saw white suburban America, he was repulsed because the longest lines were outside the iPhone stores, the Android people who could no longer communicate with each other as humans, not so much as a hello or a thank you, were clamoring to buy the latest phone application to communicate with each other in some primitive method, something approaching banging a drum by tapping on little keys. The clothing store was filled with crap made in China. The coffee created by the chains was undrinkable. It tasted like battery fluid, battery acid, tasteless, everything tasteless, from the clothing to the coffee. The people left them limp, not so much as a hello, not so much as a goodbye, not so much as a politeness anywhere. Androids, white suburban androids. But the strangest part of it was a society where mainly women walked around with plastic bags picking up dog crap. Jack wondered as to what it would look like to a Muslim fresh off the boat from the fanatical third world country, brought here by the liberal fanatics who wanted to destroy the fabric of America, marching around in turbans as they saw women, white women, bending over picking up dog crap and slinging it back as they walked around with their dog and its droppings with a smile on their face. Only in America. So, Jack Hatfield... Sorry, it's pretty funny. Those are my observations, of course, as presented in my next novel to be published maybe a year from now. I don't even know. But you see, I don't stop. It's not like a Rolling Stone. I mean, I don't stop. I can't stop. There's no reason to stop. Why? Because as Ecclesiastes wrote, whoever he may have been, of the making of many books, there is no end. Now, if you'd like to read what Jack did in his first novel, I suggest you go out and praise yourself by buying Abuse of Power. You'll love it. That's an example of what's coming the next. I gave you a little peek into the next book. Now, let's go back to the much more important stuff of an honest black man being ripped to shreds by a dishonest, illiberal establishment posing as the best friends of blacks. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Idaho. Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Uncle Savage, it's so good to be on the air with you.
Thank you.
I got to tell you, I just dig you, buddy. I've been listening to you for, about 20 years. I'm in my early 40s now. I used to think you were a little bit crazy, but as I've gotten along the road, I realized you were never crazy. You were just always ahead of everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice to hear. Everyone likes to be exonerated from accusations. So what's the principal purpose of your call, Jim?
Well, I got to tell you, I used to work for Gloria Allred about, 16, 17 years ago, I worked for her. And, I can't say that she's a bad person because she was always treated me well and she was always a nice lady to me. But I got to the point where I was so disgusted to be around her, not because of who she was to me, but what she was doing to our society and doing to our country. And it, with a little glimmer in her eye and a little laugh, when I would question her about things and people she was representing, and I would address it as, how could you be doing this when you know that it's not right? And she would sort of give me a wink and a smile about it and move on her merry way. And I just know that there's people like that, that something inside of her is wrong. And she takes it out on all of us by doing these things and representing people that, I mean, Herman Cain is, from what all I can see, and I'm like you, I've got a gut for what's right and what's wrong and who's lying and who isn't. He seems like a really good guy.
Right. Whether he would be president is one thing. He seems like a decent man, and they shouldn't be doing this to him, in plain English. What they're doing to him is beyond comprehension. As I say, it's the lynching that went on in America in the early part of the last century, where black men were accused of rape in order to cover up the activities of sluts. They'd say, he did it, he raped my Jenny, and they'd hang a man. That's what they're doing to this man, and look who's doing it to him. Take a look who's doing it to him. Liberals who pretend to be the black's best friend. It's sickening, Jim. Look, I don't know that woman, but I do know this. I see the face of evil when I look at her. There is a touch of evil in that woman's look, the deadness of her eyes, in my estimation. I'll tell you something else. I asked a man today who I work with him at a distance, but I consider him a close guy. He's a black guy in the radio business, and I said to him, how do people like Gloria Allred get up in the morning and face themselves? How do they live with themselves? Because she's not alone, you got to understand, Jim. You know that. She's not the only one like this, as you could well understand. You know what he said to me? He said, when a person reduces themselves to the point where they only live for themselves and solely live only for themselves, and they live only in that bubble of self, they don't care what effect it has on the other person or the other man. That was his answer. There was no more to it than that. And I think that maybe that's a partial explanation for what I consider to be truly sociopathic behavior. Because I believe this type of practitioner of the law is a true sociopath. In the classic textbook, a definition of what a sociopath is like.
No, I would agree with you, Michael. And, I know your time is limited. Can I give you a tip on a great book I would like to see you write?
Yeah.
I would love to see you write a book, and I call you Uncle Savage because every time I listen to you talk, I feel like I'm listening to an uncle that you would dream of having, that gives you good advice, that helps you along the way, that makes you realize things are okay the way you're thinking of them. I think you should write a handbook on life.
What am I going to rewrite the Bible? Come on, that was supposed to be funny. How could I ever write a handbook on life? I'm good at what I do, but Jim, my life is just as has as much turmoil in it as yours does. My life has as much confusion and doubt in it as yours does. My life has as many problems in it as the next man does. I'm no man to give the next man advice, to be honest with you.
No, but that's what you make it okay to have bad days, and you make it okay. I mean,
well, now there's something that is true. How do you live with such turmoil? How do you live with such doubt? How do you live with such an incomplete situation in your own soul is the question. And I think each person has figured it out for themselves. You know, what do you do to get through life, in other words, is the question. How do you deal with it? How do you cope? Aren't you asking for my methods of coping with life? Isn't that what you're asking for?
Yeah, it is. And
I will give you the answer. I'll give you a kernel of one of the answers, because there are many answers. You ready for it? It's many things. You want to hear one of them? Many years ago, when I was going through hell, internal hell, 30 years ago, I didn't think I'd get through that phase of my life because I'd been destroyed by the liberal establishment. So I thought I had killed myself to get a PhD from a great university, and they would not hire a white male anywhere. 80 universities said drop-dead white males need not apply. Okay, I've gone through the story. It doesn't hurt me anymore. It was God's hand. God wanted me in the radio business. God wanted me to write books. He didn't want me to take a little a bureaucratic position in some dumb university and sit there waiting for my pension and to frighten children with A, B, C's, and D's. So anyway, that was God's hand, but I didn't know it at the time. And I read a lot of things, Jim, and one of the things I recall reading was something Freud wrote. And Freud wrote the following. Sigmund Freud wrote that if one day you wake up and you find out that you can only crawl on one hand and one foot because that's all you have, he said, crawl on one hand and one foot. And that got me through everything, because none of us are perfect. All of us are crippled to a certain extent. Don't you see that, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care who the athlete is. I don't care who the entertainer is. Every one of them is crippled in a certain way. And what they're doing is putting forth the imagery that their creators want them to have, which is that of the Superman. And so they're always showing the girl, ah, ha, 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 oh, oh, another opening, oh, another lover, oh, yes, ah, ha, 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 oh, ho, 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 ho. Then why in the heck are they in and out of rehab? Why in the heck are they such drug addicts? Ah, ha, ha, oh, ho, ho. Or half the men that pretend to be men are not really men. You understand that, don't you? That beards for wives or girlfriends, you know, that's part of the game, right, Jim?
Oh, this is the stuff that makes it so funny, is only you can say it in your way. It's like when you're having a bad day, sometimes your worst days are my favorite days to listen to you.
Oh, because everybody likes to see the next man suffer. I understand that.
Oh, it's great.
I'll tell you why I haven't had too many bad days lately. I'm not drinking enough, Jim. That's one of the reasons I haven't had too many bad days on the radio lately. I've cut back on my drinking.
That's good.
No, if I drink two glasses of red wine at the wrong time of year, I don't even want to live the next day. I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to come out of a dark room. But I've learned my lesson with red wine, Jim. Hey, Jim, let me send you a present. Abuse of power. On to Jim. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I mean, there's huge stories out there. Holder grilled about the guns to Mexico and doesn't apologize to the family, says he had nothing to do with it. Iran is getting ready to nuke Israel. Israel's getting ready to nuke Iran. Fannie Mae just took out another $7.8 billion from the Treasury. $7.8 billion while we're talking about Herman Cain. Okay, you talk about distraction. Okay, it's unbelievable what's going on. And this thing with Penn State. Have you seen what's going on in the Penn State case? Have you been following this story? That a coach was allegedly raping boys in the shower room? Raping them. I'm not talking about innuendo about their size. Not saying you're a nice little kid the size of my nephew. Raping them in the shower. For years. And no one did anything to stop him. I mean, if this is true, I can't believe this went on. I just can't believe this went on. It's hard to believe this could go on. That a man could do this to children, number one, in such a high position, in such a public position such as this, and get away with it. It just shows you what people will do to cover up for their friends. I guess they thought they were untouchable. Then you got Obama and Sarkozy sneering at Netanyahu behind his back, sneering at him as though he's nothing, he counts for nothing. Unbelievable. I mean, this is megalomania. I guess if you're running America, you're running France, and you realize you're great imperial powers, as they are. I mean, these are great imperial powers. And Israel was a little speck on the earth. You sneer at a little leader. He's just the leader of a small country to them. What they don't understand is that the significance of Israel is greatly disproportionate to its actual size. I don't think they understand that. I don't think either of the yuppies, Sarkozy or Obama, they're two yuppie presidents, I don't believe either of these yuppies understand that Israel's size has nothing to do with its importance to Western civilization. Let me leave it at that for the moment. You have two yuppie presidents who sneer at Sarkozy because they think that it's a little sneer at Netanyahu. Because, again, in terms of size, Israel's nothing. Why? Because of the nature of these two men, Obama and Sarkozy. They're very, very empty. They're very empty men. They're certainly not dignified people in the regard of what I would consider to be a world leader. Anyway, that's my opinion, one man's opinion. They're very powerful men. If they can crush a nation and kill anybody they want to get away with it, believe me, I worry about things I say on this show. Believe me, I'm no fool. Believe me, I live in a great deal of discomfort about the state that this country is in and the state that I'm in with regard to trying to tell the truth. Believe me, I understand it. Now, the only reason... I'm not going to finish this paragraph. Let's go to the callers. WOR New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Moshe, go ahead, please.
Michael, quick question. I've been following this Herman Cain story, and clean-cut, articulate, put together. But wouldn't you say something just doesn't smell kosher? Four women, four different parts of the country, and all with these different allegations?
No. No, I don't think so, because gold diggers exist. And not one of them got a legal settlement from the companies. You know that, don't you?
Correct. You know, they all got exit packages.
Yeah. And I think you have to look at the overall picture, yes, and then you say, well, there's smoke, there's fire, which is what you're saying, which is exactly what the machine wants you to think about Herman Cain. But Herman Cain, in his own defense, said the one woman who is known and is stated, he did say to her, you're the same height as my wife. That was considered sexual harassment. Are you aware of how the law has been twisted today, Moshe, to what sexual harassment can be construed as?
It's going pretty far.
Well, Moshe, listen to what I just said. Herman Cain, in the presence of his own assistant with the door open, said to one of these gold diggers, you're the same height as my wife. She didn't say a word to him. She didn't complain at that time. And yet she left the company and made a complaint. And then they settled with her for a year's salary. Let me ask you, do you consider that to be sexual harassment?
No.
Okay, so if you analyzed all the other cases, I think they would all come down to that. So you have to ask yourself, in this regard, why him then? Why is it all clustering around him? Maybe the man is so honest and so open that he says things like that, and he doesn't even realize they're considered sexual harassment in a sick, twisted society where there are lawyers like Gloria Allred. I would blame the lawyers. I'd blame the American Bar Association for not disbarring people who do these things, who file lawsuits like this. I would blame the women's movement for not reining in false accusations. That's who I'd blame, not Herman Cain. Herman Cain is the man who's attracted this attention. Maybe the good result of it will be that many of these false accusations will suddenly come to light, and many people will suddenly be seen for what they are. Just gold diggers, people who are lazy, people who just want a golden parachute. I want you to remember today what happens today. All a woman has to do is say, he made me uncomfortable. That is now considered sexual harassment. We are living in the Soviet Union. A Soviet Union of the mind created by the vermin in the legal profession. Not all in the legal profession are vermin, because there are those who defend. The vermin in the legal profession who should be disbarred and their assets seized and their children taken out of school. And they should be punished for what they've done to this country.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today we watched Herman Cain defend himself from the false accusations of these women who have come forward saying this and that about him. The most telling moment came in Herman Cain's press conference with the last question, who I forget posed it, but Herman Cain answered it as such. He said, the only thing I can remember from one of the accusers is that when she came into my office, the door was open and my assistant was sitting there. There was nothing hidden. And I noticed that she was short, the size of my wife. And I said to her, God, you're the same height as my wife. He said, that's all I remember saying. And apparently that led the woman afterwards to file a harassment claim against him and the Restaurant Association. More to the point, the overly sensitive woman who won a settlement never said a word about it at the time. So these are all false accusations by gold diggers. And Herman Cain looked great, sounded great, and use this to his advantage. I hope he is the next president of the United States of America. All you have to do is listen to some of these sound bites. Listen to the sneering, hissing voice, for example, of this Reuters reporter, a voice that would have made Herman, not Herman Cain, but Hermann Göring proud. I've never seen anything like this, this rush to judgment, this attempt to attack and rip this black man apart. It's disgusting, but he's come out tall and proud.
Tim Gaynor, Reuters news agency. Mr. Cain, an Ipsos Reuters poll released this afternoon showed that 40% of Republican voters view you less favorably after seeing Monday's accusations from Sharon Bialik. Given that reaction, how can you convince non-supporters to vote for you?
Well, first of all, you don't need 100% of the voters. You need 51%. It is natural that some voters would be turned off by the mere mention of the accusations. That's normal and that's expected. And all you have to do is to look at campaigns historically, and you are able to identify those situations where some members of the public, some of the voting electorate, are going to be influenced by the court of public opinion in formulating their impression.
Listen now to Herman Cain as he tells it as it is.
I happen to think where it's coming from is that some people don't want to see Herman Cain get the Republican nomination, and some people don't want Herman Cain to become president of the United States of America. As you know, when you run for the highest office in the land, there are going to be some accusations that are going to come out of the woodwork. They're going to come from anywhere. And I have said this before. There will probably be others, not because I am aware of any, but because the machine to keep a businessman out of the White House is going to be relentless. And if they continue to come, I will continue to respond. I can't answer why the ones that have already made these one anonymous accusations and one that was, put their face on TV, started a media campaign to basically try and slander my integrity and my character. I can't tell you what their motivation is other than is to stop Herman Cain. I believe that the American people are saying that they are not going to let that happen.
Also today, we've played the sound of the interviews of those accusing him, false accusations, including that salacious attorney from Los Angeles, who we will not even mention. We've seen them on CNN and listened to the sound bites. It's shocking, just shocking to listen to this.
You were the first of the accusers to go public. What made you do that?
I wanted to be able to put a face and a voice to those women out there that didn't want to or could not, for whatever their reasons are. I wanted to tell the truth.
So you get in the car and then this advance is made. Were you shocked by what happened?
Very, very much so, because First of all, he had met my boyfriend. He knew I was in a relationship. And to me, that's very sacred when you're in a relationship to, you know, be true to that person. Secondly, this is a man that I went to for help. And the reason I went to him for help, because he's a powerful man within the organization. I respected him. I looked up to him. And it just was shocking to me that he would use that power in such a way.
Why have you waited 14 years to come out with these claims? Do you intend to make any money from your revelations?
Pierce, that was never my intention from the start, and it is not my intention to do it. I'm all about doing the right thing, about justice being served. I felt I needed to do this for the other woman that couldn't or wouldn't, and regardless of what happens, and I know there is, you're right, there's going to be a lot of backlash, and I'm going to have to suffer through that, and I'm sure I'm going to be not portrayed as, you know, different things. So I'm willing to handle it. I'm a tough girl.
Then we heard the accuser's fiance come forward.
We were cooking on Friday, and Cher mentioned that she wanted to discuss something with me, and that's when she first made me aware of her account of what happened some 14 years ago. It's not easy. I think she's got a huge heart, and I think it's taken a lot of guts and determination to actually go live, quite frankly. She must have been, and I know she was, absolutely petrified. But, you know, sometimes you've got to do the right thing. A little bit of a shock, but she's very much true blue in relationships. And, you know, I didn't really feel anything bad about what she was telling me. My only concern was obviously going public is that you do the right thing and you want to be the voice, which I think is what she's endeavouring to do, is to be the voice of herself and these other ladies, which gives some, I think, credibility to going forward.
Kane, by the way, says he doesn't even know who she is. Then, of course, there was the shameful Brit Hume, says, I didn't think he could survive before, but now it's almost impossible. It's unbelievable to me how Brit Hume is showing his true colors.
I didn't think he could survive the other allegations, you know, although I have, you know, misgivings about how they came about and the whole case. I think now it's almost impossible. In order to deal with it, you have to rebut the specifics in some way, and pretty soon you got him alone with a woman and having dinner, and the whole thing, I just think, is going to leave Republican voters, when they finally get down to voting, wondering whether this is someone they can afford to put up against Barack Obama.
Then we have sound of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton boasting about the Arab Spring and freedom in the Middle East, when nothing could be further from the truth. Churches are burning, Christians are being exiled. And here is Hillary Clinton rewriting history.
What a year 2011 has been for freedom in the Middle East and North Africa. We have seen what may well have been the first Arab revolution for democracy, then the second, then the third. And in Yemen, people are demanding a transition to democracy that they deserve to see delivered. And Syrians are refusing to relent until they too can decide their own future. Throughout the Arab world this year, people have given each other courage. Old fears have melted away, and men and women have begun making their demands in broad daylight.
Here we have former Secretary of Hate, Madeleine Halfbright, again on the Arab Spring, without facing reality of what these people have actually done to Christians, Jews, and others.
These are homegrown changes. They come from the people in the region. This is not an imposed democracy or anything like that. What NDI has done is responded to the desires of the people to figure out what organizations really work in terms of transitions, how to organize political parties, how to train. I think that I am very proud of what we've done. I have lived through a number of major changes in my life. I'm a child of World War II. And seeing the Cold War and then the end of the Cold War and now the Arab Spring is of a measure that is equal, I think, to the fall of the Berlin Wall and the amount of changes that it's going to bring in our world. You know, people ask, why is it we went into Libya? Why aren't we doing the same in Syria? And I hate to say this, but there are enough people that have either been in the government or are in the government to tell you that consistency is one of the most difficult parts of foreign policy.
You can get all of this on today's Savage Nation and also by going to michaelsavage.com. I'll give you a quick overview of the headlines. Here are the facts that undermine the Kane accuser's story right on the top of michaelsavage.com. Jobless and shameless gal going for gold, says Andrea Pizer of the New York Post. The Occupy people in Los Angeles have thrown blood and urine on the carts of vendors. It's time to round them up, put them in jail, and spank them for the damage they're causing. Where is the leadership? I can't wait for Herman Cain to be president. Maybe he can kick their you-know-whats. All of this can be found on one site, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Shouldn't a president be able to serve two terms, take some time off, and then run again? Shouldn't Americans have that choice?
Yes, I do. I believe that should be the rule. And I think that, as a practical matter, you couldn't apply it to anyone who's already served. But if going forward, I personally believe that should be the rule, because look at President Reagan. He was 70 years old when he became president. John McCain was older than that when he ran for president. And he clearly had all his capacity.
Right.
People are living longer, they're developing greater capacity, so I've always thought that should be the rule, not to affect me or anyone who served, but going forward.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to americaisrising.com. 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com.
The toy dogs play a role that is much larger than the dogs themselves, for they are the true companion animals. They've been selectively bred for size and often for great style. They are intelligent, responsive, loyal little animals and fill their job with great enthusiasm.
Yeah, they sure do. So now we have three. We have two little poodles and a Havanese named Toby. We got Teddy, we got Tasha, we got Toby. They're all beautiful. They're all beautiful. So anyway, I'm going to read you something now. The last we left off, my protagonist, my hero, Jack Hatfield, is living on a boat with his little dog, Eddie, a little poodle, 10-pound poodle, right? I want to read you something. It's a paragraph. And I want you to compare it to other books that you have read which have described the water or a bay or San Francisco, and you tell me this is not as good, if not better, than anything ever written about San Francisco. I compare this as good as Jack London's writing, if not better. I'm telling you the way it is. I don't need someone to say that. Well, I need some freako reviewer to say it. I'm telling you what it is. All right, so he gets up on the boat, and he takes his dog for a walk. And he says, this morning, however, the area was deserted, and Jack let the dog roam as he looked out at the morning sky and the bobbing boats in the marina. Jack had always been awestruck by the morning sun on the bay. On calm days when the water was flat, even a dim sun behind clouds and fog lit the surface in a light show unmatched by any digitally equipped house on Earth. Think about that sentence. They can't teach you that at Harvard Literary. On calm days when the water was flat, even a dim sun behind clouds and fog lit the surface in a light show unmatched by any digitally equipped house on Earth. Here or even in the cabin, as Jack peered out, he inevitably found himself wondering about God, creation, the meaning of life, and all those grand universal questions. In that sense, he was a spiritual man. He knew that life did not end when we died. He had seen too many deaths in Iraq to take the Nat Geo view of things. No, the Earth was not created from a ball of fire. God had created the Earth and the heavens. No, we did not simply expire like a fly or seagull. We were judged by God and sent into the next world, judged for the things we did and the things we should not have done, judged too for the things we did not do and should have done, for the things we said and should not have said, for the words we should have said and did not say. He was content to maintain his belief in an invisible God and conduct his life accordingly, and he was sustained by this faith. And while Jack himself steered clear of churches or temples, save the occasional wedding or funeral, he deeply admired those who regularly worshipped. He believed that honorable houses of worship were the moral compass that kept society on the right track. Sure, he had met some religious people who were outright bastards, but so what, he thought. Religion itself, God himself, were the eternals. Some religious institutions had their share of shame and fraud. But for Jack, they were first and foremost the core of the family, the bricks of civilization. and except for one religion, they all seemed to preach tolerance for others. All religions had gone through their phases of crusade and persecution, but only Islam still openly preached conquest and conversion, especially the radical Wahhabi sect. They were anti-women, anti-freedom, anti-America. Jack sighed, bringing his mind back to the morning as he walked Eddie back home. You know, I was in an Indian restaurant for a buffet. I can't help it. I have a thing with buffets. Yes, I mean, I could eat anywhere, okay, in the most expensive restaurant in town. But I like buffets because I'm a very edgy guy. I don't like to wait for anything. The minute I have to order something, I don't want to eat it. It's like going somewhere. The minute I make a plan to go on a vacation, I don't want to be there anymore. Okay, so it's the way my mind is. So it's the same with food. Until you sit down, they give me the menu and what would you like to eat. I get so tied up. I'd rather stay home and eat leftovers and watch television, meaning the news or a military history channel, whatever I like, a movie. It keeps my mind occupied, right? But if you go to a restaurant, I like to eat right away. In that sense, I'm very Asian. If you go to Japan, I mean, I spent time in Tokyo. I like the Japanese style of eating. You run in, you order, you eat, and you're out. They're busy people. They're very active minds. So anyway, I go to a buffet. And as I'm leaving, I won't talk about the food. I overhear a table in liberal San Francisco. One of them sneers at Christians, and the others laugh. I got so angry. But you know what I decided? I'm not going to say anything. I cannot fight every battle on the planet. It's freedom of speech. These cowards, these pinko left-wing cowards would never say an anti-Muslim thing. They would never say an anti-Buddhist thing, nor an anti-Jewish thing, nor an anti-Hindu thing. But they're very free with their big mouths when it comes to Christians. And you know what it tells me? Christianity has been subverted by the liberals to an extent that it's become a passive religion that threatens to be overrun around the planet. I believe the only way to save this religion of Christianity, which is a wonderful, beautiful religion, is for it to become, first of all, needs to go back to its origins and roots and become a very militant religion. The only way Christianity is going to survive if it becomes a militant religion.
Savage.
Today on the Savage Nation, we've been concentrating on the Herman Cain attack, but we can't lose sight of the major issues that the lame media seems to be ignoring, such as a top advisor in the Homeland Security Department has been accused of leaking sensitive documents. Joining us right now in the Savage Nation to talk about this is Eric Stackelback, a terrorism and national security analyst for CBN News. Eric Stackelback, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me.
So first, give my audience, the Savage Nation, an overview of this breaking story.
Well, Michael, talk about an outrageous story, which the mainstream media, predictably, is completely ignoring. There's a guy by the name of Mohammed Alibiari. Now, he is a kind of a self-styled Muslim de-radicalization expert. He's a Muslim activist in Texas. He's portrayed himself and sold himself as a great moderate hope of the American Muslim community. Well, the U.S. government, Michael, has taken notice. In 2010, they appointed him to the Department of Homeland Security's Advisory Council. So this guy is advising the Obama administration on its counterterrorism strategy. In fact, he helped devise the new counterterrorism strategy for this administration, which was released late last year. Now, who is Mohammed Alibiari? He's a guy, although he proclaims he's a moderate, he's a guy, Michael, that in 2004 spoke at a conference in Texas, where he lives, honoring the Ayatollah Khomeini as a great Islamic visionary. He's a guy who has praised leaders from the Muslim Brotherhood. He's a guy who has condemned the prosecution of Hamas fundraisers here in the U.S. So it should come as no surprise, Michael, that it emerged just recently that Alibiari apparently leaked sensitive government documents to the media in order to peddle stories about Islamophobia. Now, here's how it went down. There's 26 members on this Homeland Security Advisory Council, Michael. And out of those 26 members, for some reason, Department of Homeland Security isn't saying, for some reason, only Mohammed Alibiari was given special access to a government database, which included everything from terror watch lists to sensitive FBI documents. Now, Michael, get this. Just hours after he was granted this special access, He went into this Department of Homeland Security database, a nationwide database, took documents from the Texas Department of Public Safety, and immediately shopped those documents to several mainstream media outlets. Now, here's what he was trying to do. He was trying to expose the Texas government agencies as, quote, Islamophobic by leaking these documents. What he wanted to do, Michael, reportedly, was embarrass Texas governor and GOP presidential candidate Rick Perry, make Rick Perry look bad. So that was the end game. Yet one of these mainstream media outlets, shockingly, that he shopped the story to, tipped off a reporter, and the ball has been rolling since then, and this guy has been exposed. We've called the Department of Homeland Security on the carpet and said, hey, what's the deal? Number one, why was he given this secret clearance? Number two, what are you doing about this leak? Down on Capitol Hill, Michael, Texas Congressman Louis Gohmert, one of the few guys on Capitol Hill who gets it when it comes to this issue, he's demanded an investigation. He grilled Big Sis, Janet Napolitano, last week on the Hill. Still no answers from the Department of Homeland Security. I'm still waiting comment, Michael. I have requests in with the Department of Homeland Security. They're not saying anything. They promised to get back to me. I think I'll be waiting for a long time.
How could a man be given access to sensitive U.S. documents after he said in 2004 that the Ayatollah Khomeini is a great Islamic visionary?
You know, Michael, it's madness. And this is not an isolated case. As you said, this is a guy who spoke at a conference honoring the Ayatollah Khomeini. And the thing is, if you do a Google search of this guy's name, a simple Google, simple LexisNexis search, all this information is readily available online. Doesn't anyone at the Department of Homeland Security in our government agencies possess Google skills? Are they not Google savvy? It's not hard. Do your due diligence, your background research. Where is the vetting? But the scary thing, Michael, is they may very well have vetted this guy. And they saw that he was praiseworthy of the Ayatollah Khomeini and praised several Muslim Brotherhood ideologues. And our government geniuses inside the Beltway didn't think that was a problem. Michael, as you and I have discussed time and time again, this administration has given the Muslim Brotherhood and Muslim Brotherhood-linked groups here in America an open door. These are the outreach partners for the Obama administration. They believe that the Muslim Brotherhood is moderate, that they can be used as a counterweight to the real bad guys in Al-Qaeda. They believe if you're not blowing anyone up yet, you must be moderate. Well, I'll tell you, the Muslim Brotherhood is the granddaddy of them all when it comes to Islamic jihadist groups. They inspired everyone from Al-Qaeda to Hamas. In fact, Hamas is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Yet not only are we strengthening this group in the Middle East, Michael, with the so-called Arab Spring, we are strengthening them and their allies here at home, letting them advise us on counterterrorism strategy. Talk about the fox guarding the henhouse.
What does this story tell you about Napolitano and the Obama administration?
Well, look, there is, like I said, there has been a conscious decision to embrace the Muslim Brotherhood, number one. Number two, they don't know how to identify friends of America, genuine allies of America. If you're looking for moderate Muslims, they are out there. They're not very vocal, as you well know, but they are out there. There are guys that I have worked with. I think of a guy named Zudi Jasser, who would be beneficial to work with, guys who oppose jihad, oppose Sharia. But this government, from Napolitano to the very top, to Obama, has identified in every case radical Islamists to reach out to give sensitive access to. I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding of the enemy. And that's what it boils down to. What is the first rule of war? Know your enemy. Either this administration knows what they're getting into, and they know how bad the Brotherhood is, or it's complete ignorance. Either way, it's very, very dangerous for America, and it's a complete dereliction of duty.
Have we ever seen anything like this before? And are we likely to see more of this in the future?
You know, with these government leaks, now this case with Elabiari getting this sensitive access, this is the first case we've seen of a Brotherhood operative getting sensitive. I should say, Michael, the first case we know of of one of these Brotherhood-linked operatives getting sensitive access here, top-secret clearance to U.S. government documents. This is the first public case that we know of, but there have been several cases of Brotherhood-linked individuals having an open door to our U.S. government agencies. Michael, I'll give you a great example. At the White House iftar dinner for Ramadan during just in August, just past, the president of a group called the Islamic Society of North America, ISNA for short, the president of this group sat just a few feet from President Obama. Now, why is that a problem? ISNA was named in 2007 as an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terrorism financing trial in American history. It's also been named in Muslim Brotherhood documents as a friend of the Brotherhood, yet here is ISNA's president sitting just a few feet from President Obama. That's a problem. Another great example for you, Michael, actually another horrifying example for you, occurred in December 2009, just 1 month after the Fort Hood terrorist massacre. We had a Muslim Brotherhood-linked individual, again, working for this group, ISNA, who was actually, if you can believe this, Michael, hold on to your hat, was actually training U.S. troops at Fort Hood, guys who were deploying to Iraq, Afghanistan. This radical Islamist was training them in cultural sensitivity and Muslim sensitivity. This is a month after the shootings there at Fort Hood by an Islamic jihadist. We have a radical Islamist training our troops. It defies description. But, Michael, we don't have enough time for me to run down all of the cases. And it goes all the way back to the Clinton administration, carried on through the Bush administration, but it's reached unprecedented levels under Obama.
What has Napolitano's top advisor done to our national security? What damage has been done?
You know, I talked to Texas Congressman Louis Gohmert about this. And, Michael, there's a handful of guys, Peter King, Louis Gohmert, Alan West, Sue Myrick, Trent Franks, handful of people on Capitol Hill who truly, truly get this issue. And I talked to Louis Gohmert, the Texas Congressman, about this last week. And he said, Eric, this is putting our nation in grave danger. This is the equivalent of letting Nazi agents for the Emperor of Japan during World War II, into our most sensitive positions. During the Cold War, we didn't ask communists to come in and train us on how to defeat communists. That's essentially what we're doing. We're asking radical Islamists to come into our most sensitive government agencies and teach us how to defeat radical Islamists. It doesn't make sense. It's madness. It's suicidal. It's putting us at great risk. And for a lot of the people here inside the Beltway who don't understand the enemy, people who don't want to aid and abet the enemy, like most on the left, but people who just kind of don't get it and they don't know much about, you know, Islamic radicals, jihad, they're easily influenced and easily swayed by these smooth-talking Muslim Brotherhood operatives who say, hey, move along, nothing to see here, Islam is peace. Far too many people are easily swayed by that, and policymakers, Michael, are swayed by that, and that is very dangerous.
Eric Stackelback, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much. And you can check out my show, Stackelback on Terror, on cbnnews.com and pick up my book. Talk all about the Brotherhood in there, The Terrorist Next Door. Thanks again.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Her motives are pure. She's not, she's not suing anybody. She's not, she could have sold her story. She has not accepted money for this story. She's not going to accept it. She just wants the truth to come out as she knows it, as she's lived it, as she sees it. And that's why she did what she did today.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Let me read you two pages. Take a break from the politics of the day. Pages 1-4. Jack is the hero. He lives on a boat called Sea Rider. So Jack goes back to the Sea Rider the next morning. When he steps onto the deck, he discovered he had had another visitor in the night. He found a package about the size of a shirt box, wrapped in brown paper and tucked against the starboard pilot house door. There was no name, no address, no writing of any kind. Artie thought, what the heck was this all about? He raised the package slightly, feeling with his fingers for a mine-like depression plate underneath. Nothing. He kept it level as he raised it. There was no lopsided weight to indicate a packed explosive. No faint chemical smell. No ticking. No wires that he could see under the wrapping. Snatching it up, he let himself in, then moved into the galley and laid it on the table. He tore away the brown paper. All he found inside was a briefcase containing a swath of papers. Government authorization forms, from the looks of them, generated by the Department of Defense. Jack paused when he saw them. Was this something you should be looking at? The authorization involved a special transport mission. On August 20th of this year, a shipment of highly classified experimental hydrazine-based rocket fuel was to be carried from a facility Jack wasn't even aware of, designated by number only. For security reasons, the fuel will be traveling by tanker truck rather than the usual rail transportation. According to the timetable, part of that journey would involve passing over the Golden Gate Bridge at approximately 2,200 hours that night, and Jack got the impression that the bridge authority had not been notified of this shipment. The truck itself would be marked as a milk tanker. In other words, this was a so-called black shipment. Okay, Jack had no doubt that happened all the time. The question was, why had this package been left on his deck, and who had left it? Well, Jack goes into the details on pages 125 and forward on abuse of power. I don't want to give away the plot. I think I'm one of the few Renaissance men left in America, because when I grew up, that was considered so cool. I don't even like the word cool. I never used the word cool. I hate it from the day it originated. I was in the hip age, where you use the word hip, and if you didn't say hip, you weren't hip. Right? He's hip. But then that became, right, not cool. So the next thing comes along, other words like cool, but I didn't like it because it was being used in every, you know what I'm saying? But you do know what I'm saying. You don't have to use the word like hip or cool to understand when something is there. Either it's there or it's not there. But when I was young, when I was coming up, a Renaissance man was considered the thing to be. It was the mark of a diverse individual in the true sense of diversity of spirit, diversity of mind. Whoever even talks about the word Renaissance man anymore? You say Renaissance man, you think of some freak who wears like velvet costumes at a Shakespearean play. We don't mean that when we say Renaissance man. But the vernacular of America has been so warped as a result of the limits of education and rap music, I guess television as well, that people don't even know what you mean in half the phrases I use. And I'm not the most big word user on the planet. In fact, I seek to avoid big words. Trust me, I can use them when I need to. I can use Latin words if I needed to, but I don't. Because I don't need to show off how smart I am with big words. There's a guy in radio, an old guy. He has no education. I don't hold that against him because I know a lot of bright people who never went to college. This guy never went to college, so he's defensive about it. So what does he do as a talk show host? He uses very big words as often as possible to show how literate he is. But it doesn't work. You got to speak the common parlance of the average man, you know, the street language, because you can get great ideas across with a very basic vocabulary. Am I right or wrong? I think so. I don't need to throw in, you know, PhD words to make you understand that I know them. There's no need for them. I mean, what do you need them for? They're used when they. By the way, you know, it's interesting. Language is very interesting. Incidentally, I could get into a little discussion of language right now. Because it's an interesting topic. What is language? We all use it. Don't we all use language? Everyone out there uses language, from the lowest to the highest, from people with a 200-word vocabulary to people with a 40,000-word vocabulary. In all of the languages on the earth, everyone is using a language. A dog barks, that's his language. A bird chirps, that's her language, correct? A pachyderm, whatever it does, is using pachyderm language. They're all communicating. So we're talking about communication. Now, this is an intriguing concept because there once was a phrase that said to the Hebrew, the word is the deed. I don't know who wrote that. In fact, if anyone out there is super literate, can you look up that phrase? There must be a book on this. I had an old friend who once wrote that to me because he was a printer and a print fanatic. And he was a Jewish guy, and he said, to the Hebrew, the word is the deed. Okay? The word is the deed. Now, look how far we have come from that phrase of to the Hebrew, the word is the deed, to the age of Obama, where no words have any meaning whatsoever. It's all, You know, the word I'm seeking is quite interesting. Aristotle had a whole school of, in Greece, there were whole schools of people who were taught how to speak eloquently and say nothing. So they were the predecessors of today's political class. Young men from aristocratic families in ancient Greece were sent to schools where they were taught to be sophists. And you've heard the phrase sophistry, right? Obama is the epitome of sophistry. And that's putting it in a classy way. In other words, he's all style and no substance whatsoever. Okay, so there's a word. So now let's do something together for having fun together, okay? I have a book in my hand called The Concise Etymological Dictionary of the English Language by Skeet. I love this book, right? But no one even knows about it. It's one of my prized possessions. Why? Because if you look up a word, it shows you where it originates from. And I say, well, who cares about that? Well, I kind of want to know where it came from. So here it is. You ready for this? Sophist. It has a complete different reason, meaning than I just told you. Sophist, a captious reasoner, not a cautious reasoner, a captious reasoner, okay, is what it means. Then they show the Latin and the Greek. A skillful man, also a sophist, teacher of arts for money, interesting, to instruct, sophistry. But that's related to the word sophisticate or sophisticated, right? So when you say someone is sophisticated, what are you saying about them? They put on airs and that they're basically insincere people when you say that they're sophisticated, as opposed to a guy who dresses down, speaks the plain language, is an ordinary man. That's opposite to sophisticated, and the man is not a sophist in that regard.
Savage.